Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
You got plans. Don't say that.
Shut your trap.
I'm sipping wine. In a robe.
Well, welcome to another episode of Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle and Chris Michael Ward. And we have a special guest tonight. Our guest is Rhonda L. Johnson, is a native of Washington, D.C. And as a resident of the nation's capital, she is also the CEO, author, certified care specialist, consultant for the New Hope 2 Reality, LLC, and a certified business and small business enterprise company. Motivated by deep concern for the general lack of knowledge, the persistent stigma, and the prevalent misconceptions surrounding co-occurring disorders related to addiction and mental health. So as we merge into our interview tonight, if you'd like to talk and talk to her personally, dial 347-945-6003 and hit the one key. And I know that you want to say something. Otherwise, you will remain muted. And I want to thank all my listeners north to south, east to west, and everyone around the globe. And as the latest count, I got 47 countries around the world tuning in to listen to Unmasked. So, hey, we went up with 5 different countries. Yay. I'm feeling
that. Great.
So I want to introduce you to my co-host, Chris Michael Ward, before we bring on our guest. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Terry. How are you? It's cold and rainy in Ohio. How's the weather where you are?
Beautiful. Sun is out. Weather's in the 70s, upper 70s. Wearing shorts and sandals. So I can't complain, baby. You know, I'm down here near the Gulf, you know, so you know it's warm where I'm at. So without further ado, we want to get this phenomenal woman on the line. How you doing, Rhonda L. Johnson? Pseudonym is M.R. Johnson. If you want to find her, you'll find her under Rhonda Johnson on Facebook and some of the other media sites. How you doing, darling?
I am wonderful. I am wonderful. First and foremost, thank you and Mr. Chris for this great opportunity to join you tonight.
Sure.
My thing is, I'm still grooving on the song y'all was just playing.
Hey, that's what I'm talking
Me
about.
Me too.
Girl.
I'm really, really grooving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love you, Bruno Mars, and that particular one was called Silk Sonic because him and Pat Anderson, they got together and created, Silk Sonic. But individually of each other, they both bad brothers, man. They're really, really good. But that's another story. We want to talk about you. And when did you have an addiction? When did you get clean? And then I'm going to let you talk about that a little bit, and then let Chris ask a question. And then we're going to find out about, you know, what prompted you to start the healing process, you know, whether it was family members sick of you, you know. You know, because sometimes we can get sick of our family members. They ain't doing the right thing, because I have some family members myself that, woo.
Right.
Girl, you just don't know.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And they said the citizens are still dealing with that kind of confusion, but, you know, we want to talk about you tonight, darling.
Yeah, and it's so interesting when you say people are still going through this. First and foremost, again, my name is Rhonda L. Johnson. I do wear many hats. I'm an author of 4 published books that address co-occurring disorders. I am Washington, D.C. certified peer specialist. And what a peer specialist is someone who has personal and lived and professional experience to be able to go out and reach those that psychiatrists, psychologists, and some caseworkers can't reach because they're not able to disclose what they have been through. So a certified peer specialist is one of the things I am. I'm also the mother of 3 adult children. 2 of them are firefighters for Alexandria, Virginia. My daughter graduated as a school teacher who's now a home mom. And I have 3 beautiful children that married into my family, as well as they have given me 10 grandbabies and 3 bonus grands. So when
that means, don't you? You got some good kids. That's why, you know, they was making them babies. sons and daughters, okay?
Yeah, and I want to share during this podcast that no matter what a person has been through, no matter what drugs or alcohol that you have had in your life, there is help, there's hope, and there's treatment out there. And most importantly, you're not alone. So my story began that I started smoking marijuana when I was 8 years old. I used to hang around older. Yes, I was 8 years old. And because I hung around older people and because I was a mature young person, God sent angels in my life. I never was raped, molested. I never was jailed or homeless. So I want everybody to understand, just because a person has a drug problem, it's not stemmed from all trauma from something happening. Mine was marijuana was my medication to calming voices down. So voices such as something telling you at a young age, you're not worthy. You're not good enough. You're worthless. And I ain't talking about a person. I'm talking about spiritual beings trying to take you from the assignment that God has given all of us to do. And once I learned the diagnosis, which was, and a lot of people, and we're going to talk about this tonight as well, it's called co-occurring disorders. Now, what are co-occurring disorders? Co-occurring disorder is when a person has a mental health and an addiction at the same time. They feed off of each other. So because I smoked the marijuana to mask my depression, not knowing which one came first. Did depression come first? Or because I started smoking marijuana at 8 years old, which one came first? All I know is marijuana for me at that time was medication. And that's how it all began.
Wow. That's a lot, 8 years old. Okay, Chris, you got a question for Rhonda?
Yeah, Rhonda, I guess to fast forward a little bit, did you have to hit rock bottom to stop marijuana, or did you just stop like on your own? Or did you stop?
Marijuana was the gateway drug, Chris, for me. Here in Washington, D.C., so let's say from 8 to 13, I was smoking marijuana. Let's say from 15 to 17, I was smoking, which in some areas of the world is called angel dust. Here in Washington, D.C., it was called PCP. And what PCP was, my teen years, was it was embalming fluid on top of the marijuana. So it gave you this zombie type high. But because I started with the marijuana at such a young age, my body was used to some type of chemicals, never understanding what normal was. From the PCP, here in Washington, D.C., during the 1980s and 1990s, we were plagued with crack cocaine. We were also known as the murder capital of the world. So what what the listening audience needs to understand, a lot of times when a person's the marijuana, it's either to escape or to, because, you know, now marijuana is legal, to
some states, not all states, some states. Yeah.
Correct.
Many
not
states.
Down here.
Yeah.
Marijuana, get whatever those states feel like marijuana outside
Ohio,
of making a problem,
New York.
That's what most people when they start with marijuana. So, yeah, and to say hit rock bottom, what my rock bottom was, my mother and father were the matriarchs of our family. My dad passed away at 57. My mom passed away at 55. My dad and mom was married. My mom was 15 years old. My dad was 17 years old. They were together almost 40 years, and they died a year apart. That was my rock bottom.
Wow. You know, it must have been true love because they was very young when they got married, and it lasted that long. That had to be true love.
Oh, it was love. They showed my mother and father was a neighborhood mother and father to many, many children. And it was a blow. Growing up in my neighborhood, somebody had said to me after my mother and father died, they said, do you know your mother and father was one of five mothers and fathers in the neighborhood?
Wow.
People don't know what mothers and father looked like. It was always either a one-parent home. So my mother and father were amazing. And when they died, it was like Humpty Dumpty, and we couldn't put it back together again. That was my
father. I understand. I understand. Well, let me ask you this. What was the age that you decided that you were going to start getting high with the lace marijuana, you know, the PCP, angel dust, whatever you want to call it? Or was it after the death of one of your parents that triggered that place in your mind that I can't keep doing this, you know?
Actually, and this is where the love of children come in. My kids, I was, and I think this is important to bring out early too. There are many people who are suffering in silence. They get high in silence. They go through PTSD, depression, anxiety by themselves. So a lot of times in this world, especially after COVID-19, there are many people who are suffering and you don't even know. I was a closet. My mother and father, if they even thought I was getting high on some daggone PCP or crack cocaine, whatever, hit my butt, and everybody in the neighborhood would have known because my mother and father ain't played that. My mother was like, oh, no, ain't no child of mine going to be no drug addict. So I was one of them closet ones. And because PCP transitioned to crack cocaine, because there was no more marijuana, there was no more marijuana to put the bomb in fluid to make the PCP, so you had no choice but to go to crack cocaine.
Well, it's funny you say that because back in the day, they would take the crack cocaine and crumble it up in a joint, and they would call it Primo, where it's not the harshness that you would get from smoking weed. It was like even though you're smoking weed, it had a like smooth taste to it, and the high was a little different. It was like,
And that was me. That was me because I wasn't gonna go out and there is percentage, and I want the audience to understand too. Just because a person smoked crack cocaine did not mean they lost all their integrity. Max Robertson was a news anchor on Channel 7. He died. Max Robertson looked everybody in the mirror, in that TV camera before he died, and he said, never let anybody take your integrity, because once you lose your integrity, what do you have left? I can walk the streets right now and keep my head held high, because first and foremost, I know God.
And that's true.
I think the people that because they doing it where people don't know they're getting high or they're suffering from different things, even domestic violence. It's a lot of people out here going through domestic violence, but you wouldn't know it.
Right. So. But you know something about the drug thing, Rhonda? You know, you're right about the integrity because, you know, back in the day, you know, some people, you could be sharing your drugs with them, and they be trying to hide it and put something to the side. Here you paying for the stuff, and they scandalous, you know. And I ain't never been scandalous when I was partaking of that thing in my life, you know. I always was, like, you know, upstanding, you know. I shared.
That's right.
You know, I didn't try to steal nothing over 10. I didn't have no more left because I'm trying to hoard something that somebody is paying for. You know, it's a lot of people who are scandalous in that drug thing. So not so much as that, you know, high affects you, you're high. You know, sometimes you got to be very mindful of the people you're associating with because they're going to say whatever you think they think you want to hear because they want your stuff for free. And when they got something, they acting like, I don't have nothing. You know, they just, scrupulous, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you talk about the lacing it on top of the crack cocaine on the marijuana, that was one of my things that kept my integrity, because the marijuana gave me the munchies. And when you put it on that, it gave the crack gave it a different, it wasn't like you, because people who do certain drugs manifest things.
Right.
That crack will make you manifest. If somebody's chasing you in your dreams, when you smoke it, they chasing you. If somebody has done something to you, that drug brings that out. So, yeah.
Yes. Girl, you're right about that. But Chris has a question for you, baby.
You need to understand that a lot of times trauma does things to make a person get high. Because they don't want to feel,
we can
lie to ourselves, but when we go to sleep, it's still there.
Exactly. Okay, Chris, go ahead, darling.
To take that away.
Okay, exactly. My next question, Rhonda, is did you have any mentors, when you were first trying to get clean, did you have anybody that reached out? Did you have any mentors?
And Chris, thank you for that question, because
you're welcome.
I wanted to share when you said it the first time in another way. My children, my oldest son said, "Mom, I don't care what you're going through. I'll help you. I won't leave you." And my middle son felt the same way, and my daughter, because all three of them are very close. To this day, all three of my kids are very close. And they supported me. And they realized that after my mother and father died, that's when my drug use escalated. So they were my mentors.
I understand that, because it's hard to lose a parent, especially when you have a close dynamic in your family. But did you start these positions after the death of your parents, or was it before the death of your parents? Did they know that you even was dealing with drugs at all?
They knew I smoked marijuana. I didn't even smoke cigarettes in front of my mother and father. I was really a closet addict. I was like, I ain't smoking. Yeah. I'm daddy's girl. I'm mama's girl. I ain't going to let them see me doing no smoking no cigarette. But
I know that's why.
Yeah. I love them. I respected them that much. That probably would help me during the crack cocaine epidemic. But my mom knew. I graduated from high school, Crossland High School in Camp Springs, Maryland, as I had my cosmetologist license. And because I could do hair, I'm very creative, they saw things in me. But my mom also saw that I was having mental health challenges as a little girl. And she was like, you know, she told my daddy, she said, she called him daddy. She said, "Daddy, Rhonda needs to go see somebody." And, you know, here in Washington, D.C., or the DMV, if we, the black girls and boys, would have the school system or your friends knew that you were suffering from mental health, they would have told you to go to St. Elizabeth, and that's here in Washington, D.C., a psychiatric hospital. And my daddy was like, "You ain't going to put that tag on my daughter. That ain't happening." What my daddy did, my daddy bought me a life-size doll baby, and her name was Susie. Excuse me. And I could talk to Susie when I was going through things. And because she was a life-size doll baby, you know, she heard everything. Susie heard everything. But my mom and dad, they knew, you know, I was going through something.
When did you decide, during all of this, from you stopping when you had the epiphany, enough is enough, when did you decide to go back to school, I presume, to become a CEO and everything else? And when did you decide, and was that expensive, or was you going to community college? where they really don't charge you a lot?
Well, I was 40 years old. I want to let everybody know. I was 39 when my dad died, and I was 40 when my mom died. So when my children, my son came to me and said, "Mom, go get help." Let's say that was, I was 41. I'm now 59. So at 41, I went into the psychiatric ward. I went into the psychiatric ward 6 different times before I received the right diagnosis. So with, because all they want to say is, and I don't know if you know this is true or not, Chris and Ms. Terry, all they want to say is black people, all we are addicts. Nobody wants to
exactly. And that's why we never want to go
address the social challenges we're going through. They don't want to address the depression. And all time, two of them, I was really sick. I was, my body physically was sick, and I knew that was the only way I could get help. So going back to the change, when I started going to the psych ward, it was people, Chris and Ms. Terry, that were professional psych ward that they didn't want their job or their families to know they were in the psych ward going through drug withdrawals and mental health.
That was a lot.
I was elected
because
probably by the third, by the second time I was elected, because I started showing leadership. Like, wait a minute, what's really going on? Something ain't right here, you know. And that's where the first book title came from, "Memoirs of an Addict: Fact or Fiction." So we're talking about professionals. I'm, when I say professionals, y'all, I'm talking about doctors, lawyers, teachers. People on, in all types of walk of life was in that psych ward, and they didn't want nobody to know. They were in there.
Yeah, they had on a down low. Yeah, they had that on a down low because they didn't want to affect the image that people had of them. But Chris got a good question for you. Go ahead, Chris, darling.
Yes, for our listeners who may be experiencing what you went through, Rhonda, do you have any advice? Like, maybe they're afraid to get help, or maybe they don't know how to get help. Do you have any advice for them?
First thing, you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, "I need help."
Hello.
That's because, see, my children couldn't do it. The death of my parents couldn't do it. The friends, the male friends that I had at that time in my life, they couldn't do it. I looked myself in the mirror, and I saw somebody that wasn't me. I was over a friend's house, and I looked in the mirror, and I said, "Who was that in the mirror?" And it was me.
Wow.
I had went by Elliot for so long. When my mother and father died, my alias or dual personality, her name was Mary. But once I looked in the mirror, I saw Rhonda, devastated, hiding behind this other personality, because most people, and I'm pretty sure that's listening today, have an alias. They're going by somebody else because they, the pain is so deep, they don't want nobody to know who they are. So when I looked in the mirror, Chris, and I saw that that wasn't me, and the person who was a sincere person said, he told me, he said, I'll help you. Just whatever you need, just go get help. He said, "You ain't got to get a job. Just go to school. Go do something." And because I looked at myself and I saw a difference, that's what did it. And then when I went, like I said, to the psych ward, and they finally, after looking at myself in the mirror and admitting I had a problem, that's the second step. You got to admit that you're a drug addict. You got to admit you're going through depression. You got to admit that something ain't right.
That's right. That's a hard thing to do, to admit that.
You tell yourself. That's right.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do.
And the third step was not being ashamed. Because, see, by me being a closet addict for so long, I didn't want nobody to know I was smoking no crack or PCP or marijuana and or drinking and smoking cigarettes. I mean, like I said, cigarettes, and that's nothing, you know, but I, most people didn't even know I smoked cigarettes. That's how closet addict I was. So the first step is looking yourself in the mirror. The second step is admitting you got a problem. And the third step is overcoming the shame. That's the third step.
That's a big one, overcoming the shame, because a lot of times people have an image of you because they can see your work, even though you might be messing up in secret or whatever. You know, they see your potential. And when you realize that you're falling short of what other people expect you to be, that can trigger depression as well. So tell me some of the names of the other three books you got. You got four books. Tell me the names of them.
So Memoirs of an Addict, Fact or Fiction is the first book. And going back to the question Chris said, when those undercover addicts in the psych ward saw what you just said, Terry, they saw it in me. They said, Rhonda, you got to go and tell our story. And that's how the first came about. They was like, because they couldn't do it. So that book came first. And then Mary Pumpkin's Recovery Girl. And that one is introducing Mary Pumpkin a little bit more. But that's like a work. All of my books are workbooks. So the second one is more like a child book where kids can color, do puzzles, but it's all on healing. The third book is called, it's right here, The Hope Influencer's Diary. And The Hope Influencer Diary is where you can write affirmations and things to motivate your mind, manifesting things. So that's a writing book or a journal, diary. And the fourth book, which is the most powerful book, the first one and the fourth one is the most powerful book because all of them have been written by God. But the fourth one has been ordained by God. And that's to educate people. It's also a workbook, but it's more of a story. And it says, the world according to the year 2020 will never be the same. The urgency of empathy and cognitive education, hope, and solutions have required society to begin the uncomfortable conversations of historical trauma by revisiting the past to address the present, which refutes the letter of 1712, why generational trauma prevents the family from moving forward. Now, this book has four chapters. It's chapter one, Mama, Why? Chapter two, Where is the Data? Chapter three, The Contingency Plan? And chapter four, I Forgive.
Well, Rhonda, we're going to take a little small break and come back, and we're going to close up with a little bit more information about what you're doing. But stay with us. We'll be back in 2 and 2.
Thank you.
I knew God was with me. I always used to pray. My prayer was I asked God to not to let the devil kill me out here while I was in the streets before I could get back. But I said, if you give me one more chance at life and music, I promise you, I'm going to shout you out, and I'm going to testify, and we're going to have a little church up in there.
Waking up, thanking God, every day is feeling just like Sunday. White you fly, by my side, green light, everything is going my way. Riding clean, living dreams, just left the barber and I'm feeling like Midas. Heard him say, give him praise. In the water, got you acting like this. Ain't a day gone by that I don't try to thank the Lord up above. And if you wonder why I'm loving life, I'm close and I tell you what's up. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed. Yes, living every moment, no regrets. Smile up on my face, I'm like, oh yes, I'm blessed. Yes, I'm blessed. Breaking out the bus stop. Life is good, really good. And every moment, no, I can't forget. I gotta say, I won't love and life. Come close and I tell you what's up. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed. Yes, living every moment, no regrets. Smile up on my face, I'm like, oh yes, I'm blessed. Yes, I'm blessed. Yes. Ask me how I'm doing, I'm blessed. Yes, living every moment, no regrets. Smile up on my face, I'm like, oh yes, I'm blessed. Yes, I'm blessed.
Welcome back to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle and Chris Michael Ward. Now, I see some callers on the line. Now, we getting ready to shut it down, so if you want to ask a question or make a comment, this is your time now to hit the one key. If not, we got a few minutes, and we want to take it back to Chris. Chris, you have a last closing question for our guests.
Last question. Yeah, which out of the four books that you've written, Rhonda, which one took the longest?
The first one.
Okay.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, because you've taken somebody else's story on too.
Yeah, that one took the longest.
Yeah, you know, we truly, truly are so happy to have you on here. And real quick, Rhonda, let them know what your credentials are, you know, how they can reach you on your media sites, because a lot of times people don't want no one to know personally what they're going through, and they want to tell a stranger. And, you know, she got you, man. Rhonda L. Johnson, or her pseudonym on the books, M.R. Johnson, man, she got you. So I'm going to give the floor to you, darling.
Okay, real quick, I would like to thank you again for this opportunity. It helped my soul tonight, especially with that song, I'm Blessed. But on Saturday, April the 27th, if any of your listening audience is in the Washington, D.C., or DMV, Baltimore, Philly, New York area, we're having a national walk for co-occurring disorders. It's going to be at the National Mall, 13th, 14th Madison and Jefferson Drive, and all are welcome to join. If you want to get in contact with me or join us on Saturday, April the 27th, you can go Google DC, Walk the Number 4 Recovery, and there is going to be places, vendors where we're going to have treatment. You can find out all kinds of information about Narcan. We're going to have a youth panel. We're going to have an altar call prayer, and we're going to have we're going to do our go national line dance. And so if you want to reach, please email me at DC Walk the number 4, recovery at gmail.com. But if you go Google that, DC Walk for Recovery, you'll find a little bit more of the work that I'm doing. Yeah, and we would love to have people come out and join us. It's not a march. March intimidates. Walk encourages. We're talking about core courage. Hey, we're talking
yeah,
about
right.
core courage.
It's not right. a march. I like that.
I'm going to make y'all laugh. Addiction, mental health, domestic violence, youth violence, crime, the opioid fentanyl crisis. So come on out and join us. DC Walk for Recovery
wow.
at gmail.com.
Well, you know, some praise God. I hope it be a big success because a lot of people are hiding behind closed doors and they got issues. And sometimes if you don't address those issues, then you manifest that in negative ways against someone else. But, you know, I truly want you to know from the bottom of my soul that, you know, once you're on the show, you're always family and you can always come back, especially when it's a
yes.
guest. That, you know, can talk with us because
thank
I
you.
Used to do 2 hours. And, you know, when I was doing 2 hours, so we had people got nervous. They
yeah.
wouldn't talk. It was like, oh, I was pulling teeth.
Oh, yeah, we
man,
did 2 hours. It was dreadful.
Yes, it was. So I think 45 minutes is the max. I mean, that's fine with me. I love you, man. We family. And Rhonda, whatever, I'm serious.
Yes.
If you want to call me, say, hey, Terry, you know, I want to come back. I want to share what's going on. I got another book coming out or I'm going to be somewhere, you know, I got you. I'm paying for this situation here, so I can do what I want to do. I'm the CEO of Unmask.
Yep, you are. You're the Barbara Walters
right.
of Unmask, Terry. We've covered this before.
Yeah, say it, Chris. You know it, darling. Yeah,
well,
but we just like Batman and Robin. He's my trusty sidekick.
I love it. And if anyone is interested in purchasing my books, you can go to Amazon.com. I'm listed under M.R. Johnson, but if you pull up Memoirs of an Addict, Fact or Fiction, there it'll populate all of my books on that page.
Wonderful. You said on Amazon it's Memoirs of an Addict under M.R. Johnson.
Yep, Memoirs of an Addict, Fact or Fiction.
Fact or Fiction. Well, it's truly fact because, whew, you know, the people, like you said, doctors, you know, correctional officers, police officers, firefighters, ministers, the people you don't think they have issues, but we all have issues based on certain things that happen in our life. You know, we just don't start as a baby and we all jacked up in the head. Something happened, you know, that triggered that, you know.
That's
so
true.
We need to address that. Girl, thank you so much. And you have a great weekend. Chris, you have a great weekend. And
you
all
too.
The people in the 47 countries around the world that tunes in to Unmask, tell your friends. Let's get this number up
yeah.
to 50.
Yeah, spread the word. The more the merrier.
That's right. The more
that's...
the merrier. Yeah. And y'all be blessed, both of y'all. And y'all take care now. Have a good day.
You too. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Pull up at the mall, couldn't find a place to park. Threw my keys to the valet.
Hand
that for me. I was only about to hang, wasn't looking for a thing. I was just about to bounce. And then I saw Miss Lady. Then I said to myself, little thing, a couple of bags in her hand, right in front of Macy's. That's where a pretty girl's hang.
M&A, conversating on a cell phone, looking so amazing. And I said to myself, take her to the cookout.
Yeah, her gon'
have. Take her to my mama house. If she need her hair done,
my cousin can.
I'll treat her like a queen, give her everything.
She will be my girl till we old and gray.
And I knew it from the moment that I saw her love and love.
Makes me so